Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you, with your host, Corey Smith. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and Apco Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Manager with EasyCare. Please welcome my guest, Kenneth, Professor and Director of Cybersecurity at Anderson University in South Carolina. Kenneth, welcome to Forward.
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Good to hear you. So I'm looking forward to our talk.
Yes, I am excited about this topic. Mm-hmm. This episode is going to be called Digital Fortress, Navigating Cybersecurity and in Emerging Threats. Yeah. And you are an expert in this field and is tailor-made just for you. Mm-hmm. But before we get into the episode, Ken, tell us a little bit about you, how you got to this point in your career. And what do you really do at Anderson University in South Carolina?
Well, it was through the Air Force. I spent 20 years in the Air Force. And right away, even as a second lieutenant, I was doing information security, CompuSec back then. We didn't call it cyber in the 1990s. It was InfoSec and CompuSec, computer security. And I did that for 10 years and then went to the Air Force Academy and taught technology at United States Air Force Academy in Colorado for about 10 years. And, you know, right now I've been in Anderson. We have a cybersecurity program. One of the key stars about the Anderson cyber program is we compete in these the National Cyber League, the NCL, which is cyber competition. 500 schools from across the country compete. And right now we've been ranked number 5 in the country for the last couple of semesters. So we're really elite in the area of CTFs, capture the flag, cyber competitions. Number 1 in the country was West Point. We're number 5, and then there's like 500 schools after us. So we have great students, great program.
That's awesome. You've been there for quite a while?
5 years. This is the 5th year.
Oh, well, that's great. So let's just jump right into the episode. Sure. Can you explain the different types of cyber threats that businesses face today?
There's a whole legion of cyber threats. I mean, ransomware is probably the one that gets a lot of attention. Okay, that's where hackers go in, they encrypt your data, for example, and they basically hold your data ransom, you know, like kidnap your data. Give us $10 million or you'll never see your data again. And that gets a lot of attention. But hurricanes, a power outage. What if you lose access, your place is shut down, you can't get to your systems for 3 days because of a flood? Those are all different types of attacks. But I'd say the number one attack vector today is what we call phishing and social engineering. And that's where an employee will click on a link they shouldn't link, download a file in an email they shouldn't download. And they're doing it because you're getting phishing attacks. It's from a social engineer. A social engineer is just a fancy term for a con man, somebody who is a liar who will convince somebody to do something you normally would not do. So the social engineer, the con man, is going in and crafting emails targeted maybe to you, Corey, or to you, one of your listeners. They get some information about them, maybe from LinkedIn, they develop a story, and they target you just to get you to click on that link. So you got to be careful about that.
How can these threats impact the overall operation and trustworthiness of a company?
The worst thing is, I think, reputational effect. So if your company ends up on the front page of your local newspaper or the Wall Street Journal, you know, here it would be the Greenville Times in Greenville, South Carolina, but or the Wall Street Journal, you really suffer a lot of trust decline coming from your customers. That's probably the number one. And that's hard to quantify. But you could get fines from the FTC these days. A lot of car dealerships are now classified as non-bank financial institutions. So you fall under some FTC rules, the safeguards rule. You can get fined there. There could be penalties, class action lawsuits. Because if you lose your data coming from your customers, some attorney is going to talk to your customers, and then they'll do a class action lawsuit possibly against the company.
Yeah, and you could lose everything. You could lose the business, millions of dollars, right?
You could lose the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
What are the most crucial cybersecurity measures that any business, regardless of industry, should implement to protect their data and systems from cyber attack?
I would say there's a lot of things you can do. The most important would be training of your employees. And because I think phishing and social engineering is the number one attack vector into an auto dealership or any company, your first line of defense is going to be your employees. They have to be able to recognize and be suspicious about emails, about text messages, about phone calls, that if they are suspicious, they need to have, as well as a system to report potential phishing attacks. So within your company, so it's training, it's your front line of defense right there. And I would say number two is you have to have some type of cyber or information security program. Somebody in your company has to have the designation, whether part-time or full-time, as the information security or cybersecurity point of contact, so they can develop a capability within your company of maintaining and developing some type of cybersecurity program. Because you got to protect your customers' data.
Right.
You're going to lose trust if there's an incident, and the incidents happen a lot. And I know attackers are going after auto dealerships. And the reason why they're going after auto dealerships is because they see it as easy pickings. They see maybe cybersecurity is not that strong in auto dealerships, and that's why they're being targeted.
So what kind of training should there be on the employee level that they can understand?
Yeah.
Because I can tell you, I'm an employee, right?
Yeah.
I know enough to be dangerous, but do I know every single threat like you do? No. So how can we, what kind of training can you give us normal folks that don't have the super powers and the knowledge that you have to give us that leg up against this threat?
Yes, sir. It's really going to come down to some type of what I recommend, what we do at Anderson University for our regular employees, not me, is we have a third party company that comes in that provides training, quarterly training, really at a basic level, how to recognize a phishing attack. For example, if you see some emails from someone you do not expect, and they're saying things like, you must act now, wire us money. You know, there's some type of false sense of urgency. False sense of urgency is often a flag for all types of fraud. And one of the neat things is that this type of training, which can be done in the company, also benefits the employee at home. Because like Corey, for example, you can get coming from your personal email account the same type of phishing attacks. So what you learn in this area of identifying phishing attacks and social engineering attacks can also benefit you at home on your regular, systems.
Wow. Okay. What are some effective ways businesses can educate their staff about cybersecurity and best practices?
Well, it's these training opportunities. You know, there's other best practices besides like recognizing cyber attacks or phishing attacks, using multi-factor authentication into any type of serious account. You know, so your systems that work, right? But also any bank or financial account that you have should all be protected with a second factor of authentication. It should not be simple, type in your password and you're in your bank now. It shouldn't be that convenient. I mean, that's your bank. You should be acquire a code coming through a text message or a token or getting a code from an authenticator app like Authy or the Google Authenticator or something. Some type of second factor besides a simple password to get into your financial accounts. I would even say social, sites like Facebook and LinkedIn have those features available as well. And of course, all critical systems at work.
Oh, wow. Okay. In the event of a cyber attack, what should companies immediately do? What should the steps be to mitigate damage and recover quickly? And can you outline a basic plan?
Yeah. The first thing you need to do in the event of a cyber attack is something before the cyber attack occurs. It's really come up with a plan. If a cyber attack occurs, like a critical database at your company is encrypted in a ransomware attack, and you have no plan at all, you're probably going to make some bad decisions, right? I think that has occurred within the automotive industry even recently, right, with a major attack. And so you have to plan, what are we going to do as a company in the event of this contingency, a ransomware attack, of a distributed denial of service attack, or a power outage, or our ISP goes out, or we have a cable cut on our campus, or with which cuts off all internet for maybe a couple of days. In the event of these incidents, what is our plan? And then sit around in and this is going to be the job of your security person, to sit around in a tabletop exercise, get all the key players and talk for 30 minutes about what we do in the event of a certain type of contingency, a certain type of incident. You do that, right? And then when the incident actually occurs, you'll know what to do. So the first step is done before the event itself. You have to have some type of a plan. And there's about, you know, I'd say 5 to 7 different types of attacks that you need to have plans for. Denial of service attacks, cable cuts, and then things like you lose some of the software that you miss your system or your company depends upon. What do? Do you resort to paper processes? Well, maybe you should have some forms available. So in the event you have to go to paper processes for a week, you'll have those forms already set up so you don't lose any customers. Things like that should be in the plan.
Okay. Should they practice this plan to make sure they have it down, or should they just have it written somewhere? And
if that's a great question.
If the red light goes on, you should do this.
Yes. I would say first write out the plan. And the second step would be to have some type of tabletop exercise where you're talking through the plan. At a certain point, you can practice the plan, but I wouldn't necessarily practice it on production systems in some type of test environment. If you're really hardcore and you want to do a test on your production systems, you better know what you're doing, because in the event that the test doesn't go right, you don't want your production systems to shut down. So that has to be done carefully. And sometimes it's not necessary to test on production systems. You do a tabletop exercise and then do some type of near production test, so you feel confident that in the event of an incident, you know what to do. You know, hurricanes is an example. A lot of times a hurricane is maybe coming at your dealership, and it may not affect your dealership, but it may affect power, or it may affect one of your suppliers, right? Your vendors who you rely upon on a daily basis. You should also plan for those contingencies, that in the event of something happening to one of your suppliers, your vendors, and they're out for a couple of days, what do you do? All those things can be taken care of, especially if you plan before.
Okay. I like that. That makes me feel a lot better. With the rapid advancement of technologies, What are some emerging cyber security tools or technologies that business should be aware of to stay ahead of the potential threats?
Well, I'm going to say, I'll answer that indirectly. I think each company, if you have a company, you know, it's important to have a single person who's in charge of your cybersecurity capability. You may not be large enough to have a full-time employee, maybe a part-time employee, maybe it's your IT person who wears two hats, security and operations. And that person has to stay on top of the latest threats, because the latest threats today are going to be a little bit different than the latest threats tomorrow, because it really does change. The attackers are using different TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures. It's a type of warfare. It's almost, you know, cyber has this military conflict warfare side to it, where the enemy is using different tactics, techniques, and procedures to break into your systems. It's almost too much to keep up with. So, but one of the jobs of your security person is indeed to keep up with that. That one of the fastest moving areas is with AI. A lot of attackers are using AI, voice recognition, deep fakes to enhance their social engineering capabilities. So they could get, let's say, for example, the CEO of a company, they will get a capture of his voice or her voice and then mimic it in a type of deep fake attack to then convince an employee to write out a check for $50,000 and wire it to supposedly the CEO who needs it for some urgent reason. Who knows? Those are some of the latest things. It's the use where the attackers are using AI to convince a target to do something they shouldn't do. A con man.
Why does this happen? I mean, why are there people out there doing this? Is it profitable for them? It must be.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So for those who are old as me, you know, you remember when a lot of the early cyber attacks, if those remember the I love you virus, you know, Melissa virus, they called it, you know, it seemed like it was just almost like a type of joke. It just sucked up resources. And but today, people, criminals, criminal organizations, organized crime, engage in cyber crime to make money. There's no doubt there is a financial motivation for it. So a lot of the recent attacks, like the CDK, I don't know the latest money or how much was paid out, but a lot of times the attackers are asking for lots of many millions of dollars as payout. And a lot of times companies have to pay it or they'll never see their data again. And they can't afford to lose their data because the price is, you could go out of business if you lose all your data. I mean, so I think the motivation is money. It's like what motivates people to commit crime.
Right.
It's the same thing.
But there seems to be more laws against a traditional crime. What are laws that are out there right now for this type of crime?
Okay, that's a great question. There's a whole bunch of laws. And this is another one that is, the different laws affect different companies in different industries, in different nations. Like, for example, if you're processing data from a European, from European citizens, then the GDPR, it's the Directive and Privacy Regulation in Europe, is going to affect you. And violations of GDPR can be millions of dollars. And there have been fines in the billions with a B even. There's HIPAA for healthcare. There's Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act for finance. But one that's been affecting, I think, more and more companies, sort of by surprise recently, has been the FTC safeguards rule. And that affects, I guess, companies that are declared to be non-bank financial institutions. And it seems like auto dealerships are being classified in that tub, as well as universities, because we take financial aid, you know, we credit card processing. So we're falling underneath the financial, the safeguards rule. And it requires this rule, which has some teeth in it. There's like fines that are can be hefty. I think it was like tens of thousands of dollars a day or whatever. It's not cheap. I wrote it down somewhere, but it's not small, a small amount. But the things that you got to do to be in compliance with the safeguards rule include some of the things I was just talking about. You have to have somebody in charge of your security program. You know, you have to do a written plan in disaster preparedness, incident response. You need to have some type of training. You need to have multi-factor authentication. I call it cyber, good cyber hygiene, Corey. It's just like, you know, what are the basic things of making your, so you don't stink when it comes to cybersecurity. And it's like the fundamentals, get the fundamentals down. Yeah. And if you're doing that, you're probably in good shape with insurance companies, as well as with the safeguards rule. Make sure you're trying to obey everything. You have to encrypt all of your sensitive data, for example. Well, that's not hard to do. You just have to know how to do it and have somebody who knows how to do it. So you're encrypting all sensitive data. So if somebody steals your data, it's encrypted and they're probably not going to be able to decrypt it.
Okay. All right. So have a scrub brush and some soap and that kind of stuff. Make sure you're clean. I get it. Okay. I'm with you.
Cyber hygiene. Yes, sir.
I love that. Many industries have specific cybersecurity regulations and compliance requirements. How can businesses ensure they meet these standards? And what are the consequences of failing to do so?
Yeah, it's kind of like what I was saying is that, you know, when you fail, there's two ways to look at it. If there's an actual incident that occurs, you know, you could lose your reputation, your value there. You end up in the front page of the paper, class action lawsuits. But, you know, I guess there's fines and there's penalties. There could be an injunction against your company, you know, something that's coming from the government, and then they could fine you. As long as you're in a state of non-compliance, they could fine you by the millions of dollars per day, depending on the agency, you know, and depending on your industry. And that should be enough of a motivation to protect. It's, by the way, it's also like the right thing to do. If you're collecting so much information about your customers, if you care about your customers, protect their data. It's almost like, yeah, I should do that. So it doesn't have to be an external coercive, you know, the government saying you got to do this. and then using regulation to put a stranglehold on you to do it. But you should, just because you care about your customers, you would want to take care of their data. And it's not trivial anymore. There are certain things that you got to do. Some of the things we've been talking about.
Wow. You are a subject matter expert on this, and I can see why you do what you do. You're very passionate about it, and it really, really, truly comes through. Ken, we're right up against the time, but I want to get your three takeaways from this episode that our audience that is listening can really take away and implement to enhance their cybersecurity today.
Okay, three quick ones. A little bit of a review. Number one, in a company, have one person in charge of your information cyber program. Whether it's full-time or part-time, have somebody in charge, because you need that to do the other two. The other one is have a good training program to make sure your employees can recognize phishing attacks, implementing antivirus software. We didn't talk about that, but that's important too, that they know why multi-factor authentication is important. Training, so they know the threats and how to solve and minimize the danger from those threats. And then third is having some type of incident response plan process where you're identifying major incidents that could occur. You want to minimize risk and have a plan so you know what to do in the event of a ransomware attack or a cable cut where you lose internet connection for your company for a couple of days. You need to know what to do, and that needs to happen before the incident occurs.
Awesome. Okay. Just in case our audience has questions, how can they get in touch with you?
Probably email. See, my email is at Anderson University. You can type in my name, Kenneth Knapp, Anderson University, and you'll see me. But it's a KKNAPP, Knapp at AndersonUniversity.edu.
Awesome. Appreciate you sharing that. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Ken, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
Be happy to.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.